Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan. Good beat there, but you will not find me in the club. Not for New Year's. That's for sure. Not amid all of this. Probably not normally anyway.
Should probably close the clubs at this point, eh?
Yeah. I mean, real clubbers only, I guess, at that point. No, but the Raptors historically have a New Year's Eve game. So I don't know. I wouldn't be on the list anyway. But maybe what you're doing for 2021 is looking ahead to 2022 and making some bold predictions for the year ahead. We did that a little earlier. We had some Jays predictions. We just did some Leaf predictions. Do a little Raptors now. Send us yours. Send us your bold predictions for the sports world, specifically around Toronto teams. Over the next year, 590-590 is the text line. We have a lot of people texting us in their most random jersey owns as well, which is fun. Someone just tweeted at me that they found a bunch of old Romanian hockey jerseys that an old lady was giving away, and they got them and they wore them as their beer league jerseys, which is amazing. That's from Daryl. They look great, and they just like have random names on the back. Random names and numbers. So I guess Daryl is some Romanian guy when he suits up for beer league. So that's pretty cool. It's a good pull. So keep those coming. Send us your bold predictions. Ailish, do you have a bold Raptors prediction for 2022? And is it about Bing Bonga?
Has nothing to do with Bing Bonga, actually. But now I'm regretting not saying that they're going to hang Bing Bonga from the rafters. Yes. Okay. So I think the Raptors will make a big splash in the offseason. And I mean somebody like a Damian Lillard or a Bradley Beal. But I do think that that might come at the expense of trading someone like a Pascal or a Fred or an OG. So I think there might be some shuffling of big names to get other big names, especially with the Pascal Fred dynamic. I don't know if Pascal, I know he had a great game last game, but I don't know if we're fully solidified on him. I know Raptors Twitter is up and down like a roller coaster. I think that there could be some big splashes in the offseason. That is my bold prediction. And I threw some names in there.
Yeah, I'll tell you. If the Raptors cash in a bunch of young chips for Damian Lillard, I will not be.
I didn't say young chips.
You said OG is like one of their youngest.
Okay, OG is a tough one. I threw in as a last minute option. I think he's too young to move on, especially with him and how him and Scotty are playing together. So, yes.
Yeah. I just.
Fred.
Yeah, Dame is not a. I mean, it's your bold prediction, not mine. But Dame is already 31. He'll be 32 next year, and he's looking to become the highest paid. Like, he wants to be the highest paid player of all time, and he's owed 43, 46, and 49 million over the next 3 years as a guy who will be entering his mid 30s and, you know, doesn't have a history of kind of driving, you know, certainly regular season teams, but he's got a little bit of the Toronto DeMar to him in that his teams haven't done super well in the playoffs.
I should have been more specific that I said names like these players. I knew that I shouldn't have said anything Raptors related because Blake was going to have more analytics than me and say that that's
not going to analytics. I just don't like that trade for the Raptors in the timeline.
Of course. You should have gone first.
Yeah, I think if they make a big trade, it would be more geared toward a future-oriented move. Like, I think it would be trying to get a younger guy to pair with the OG Scotty core. Sorry, am I not allowed to have an opinion on your Raptors' opinion?
Certainly.
Cuthbert, what about you? You got anything?
I'm going to carefully dip my toe into the water here Raptors discussion. No, I was like a more of a long-term look. One prediction is that Danny Green just never gets his championship ring. Somewhere it's lost because he's waiting far too long to receive it. But, you know, this isn't really bold, but I don't think the Raptors are making the playoffs. I don't think they're making the play-ins. I think that COVID is sort of impacting them just with the rules and the border issues and everything else that goes into playing in a country outside the United States is having probably more of an impact on them than most. And I think that will impact their performance down the stretch. But ultimately, I think it's a good thing. I don't think they're ready for that cash in the chips type of trade. I think they should put themselves in position to get the best draft pick as possible and trust in Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster to continue to make the right calls on the draft floor in those high leverage positions. It's the first time really that we've seen, maybe not the first time, but the first time in a long time that we've seen them select where they selected Scotty Barnes. And I think the returns on that have been obviously very, very positive. So another pick in the top 10 or maybe the top five, probably won't get there, but maybe they'll get some more lottery luck. But I feel like Raptors fans should want that management team to make another important selection, and then you can build from there, having a couple core pieces in place that are obviously developmental in nature to build around before you make that major, major deal and go out and get the best, or not the best player in the world, the highest paid player in the world, who is nowhere near the best player in the world. That is such an interesting goal. Yeah, I want to be the highest paid player in the league when you're good, you're a great player, but you don't deserve being that. So, you know, have a little bit of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like knowledge humility? Of who you really are, and
yeah,
just, you know, yeah, ability. Yeah, oh, awareness.
I said humility.
Oh, humility. Ability. Humility.
But also
awareness, I mean, humility. I mean, you probably should be pretty happy just making $45 million. The fact that you haven't really done anything in the playoffs other than wave Paul George goodbye.
Yeah. So, in terms of the draft, it's not as interesting a draft as last year. It's not as spicy. I don't know that there would be, you know, if you end up picking in the 4 to 7 range where the Raptors were going to pick last year, I don't know if there's anyone you're quite as excited about as Scotty Barnes. But if the option is getting lottery odds versus losing a play-in game, then yeah. And then right now they're 2 games back of the play-in. There's a lot of basketball season left, but we also know that this is in a normal year when there's not COVID, 100 COVID cases around the league, that the standings get pretty stable around this point. So, the Raptors will also have weirdly like a condensed schedule coming out of the All-Star break or post-pandemic or whatever, because they have a bunch of games to make up. So, you know, they're 2 games back of the Celtics right now for that final play-in spot, but they've played 4 fewer games. They also have not the easiest of schedules, because they've gotten the easy part of their schedule behind them. I'm going to throw a couple micro ones at you. DJ Wilson is signed for the rest of the season at some point, probably post-trade deadline, just because I don't think they're going to go into the tax right now and risk it. But he's looked really impressive so far, and he's a guy they've liked in the past. So I think he'll be the 10-day guy, the hardship exemption guy, to channel this into a full-time job at some point. Chris Boucher, traded by the trade deadline. Mm. I just think he's 28. He's about to turn 29 in a couple weeks. No longer prospect age, expiring contract. I think at this point he's been up and down enough and role uncertain enough that they wouldn't invest a longer term contract in him again. And a lot of teams could use an energy big like that. I don't like to do necessarily the trade machine thing, but I'm going to throw out one other one that I was talking with some Cavs friends with yesterday. Ricky Rubio's out for the season with a torn ACL now. The Cavs have a real need at point guard, because right now Kevin Pangos is their only healthy point guard. Shout out to EG Ailish. Goran Dragic has been assumed to be going to the Mavs for a long time. The Mavs aren't all that good. The Cavs have Cleveland has one of the largest Slovenian populations in North America. They can offer minutes. They can offer a playoff run. Ricky Rubio, who's an expiring contract and a second round pick for Goran Dragic, makes a lot of sense to me for both sides. The Cavs have some extra second round picks that project to be in the 30s. Ricky Rubio, his rights in the offseason might have some value to the Raptors, but really it's about the second round pick. So there you go. A couple micro ones for you, focusing on the next couple months specifically.
They most likely will come true, as you are the expert. So everyone listening, cash in. Bet on those things, eh?
I don't know if you can bet on those things.
Well, you could.
It'd be amazing if this, just going to say, like the Goran Dragic saga if it just ends, I mean, it's going to end that way, but just all this discussion, all everything that's gone into it, just to inevitably grab that second round pick that, you know, maybe they flip into, or they may, they translate into something, but it's just a lot of discussion for what is a very, very small outcome.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, it's going to, we will reframe the Kyle Lowry trade at that point, and it'll be, you know, you got 3 cheap years of Precious Achiuwa and a second round pick for facilitating the Kyle Lowry trade, basically. Or if you want to frame it another way, you paid Goran Dragic his $19 million for the season to get an extra second round pick and Rubio's rights or whatever it ends up being. I don't think the return was ever going to be more than salary filler and a second round pick, maybe a low end prospect if you had gotten a deal done with Dallas. But yeah, I don't think your expectations should be too high. Hey, a second round pick can get you Delano Banton. So
that's true. And that's why we should probably trust in, you know, making that. It might not be the best draft, but unearthing value at every turn, this Raptors management team. So whether they pick 9, 8, 10, whatever, maybe we should have high expectations for that pick.
So I have 2 more little ones to add. I think the WNBA will announce a Toronto team in 2022.
Who have you been talking to? Me?
No, I'm just hoping and predicting that that is the case. That would be awesome. And Raptors adjacent, former Raptor, DeMar DeRozan wins MVP.
Oh, I'd love that.
I would love that.
Those are my bold predictions for Toronto Raptors / Toronto / old Raptors.
Yeah, give me a WNBA team like now.
That would be great.
Is that possible this year? I mean, Blake sort of alluded to some insider knowledge there.
No, they wouldn't be in place for next season. Like that.
Right, I meant the announcement.
I know, but I know you did. I was answering Justin's question. Yeah, I think that's possible. Like, I think it's very much on MLSE's radar that once things settle down and once they start looking at, you know, I think right now a lot of businesses, even ones that large, are very focused on the short term and kind of surviving what we're going through and making the most of that. But once it comes back to long-term planning and how do we build the sport here, and those are the kind of questions you're focusing on, I think it makes all the sense in the world. I think it's very much on MLSC's radar. The WNBA has been hesitant to commit to expansion in recent years because their thinking is that we got to make sure the teams we have are healthy and the economic system we have is healthy. Having said that, I think the momentum on that side and the obvious market in Toronto, it makes all the sense in the world. Ailish, what's popping on the text line?
A couple texts in about bold predictions. Chris in Toronto says, bold prediction for 2022. Team Canada gets into the round of 16 in the World Cup 2022 in Qatar. Great show,
wow.
Chris.
Wow.
That's a bold prediction. That's spicy.
Yeah. I mean, it's not long ago that just them getting to the World Cup would have been a bold prediction, right?
You never know.
Justin,
I feel like that's
yeah.
That's going to take on, like, just them getting announced what group they're in, if they do in fact make it, and those games, like, it probably won't go all that well. I think we sort of understand where CONCACAF ranks, and, you know, that Mexico, you know, they can compete on the world stage, but, like, those games are going to be so fun. The announcement of who's in the group is going to be so fun. I mean, this sort of teases where we're going next with how your sports fandom has changed, and that's a big thing for me. Like, that's going to be one of the most anticipated moments, them getting in. We find out who they're going to play, when they're going to play, planning around those dates. Like, that is going to be so much fun. Round of 16 is a bit ambitious, but it's going to be great.
But if they do, we'll remember Chris from Toronto was on it. He made it happen.
There you go.
He's the oracle of our show. A couple other quick ones about predictions before we go into how we've changed. Alex from Toronto. Blue Jays and Raptors won't be able to sign anybody of significance in 2022 because of continued restrictions and border issues. Thanks, COVID. Oh, Alex. I mean,
they already signed Kevin Gausman. Like, I know that's not 2022, but they did that like a couple weeks ago. I don't think it's they let the unvaccinated guy, allegedly unvaccinated guys, go, but they just signed Kevin Gausman. I think it'll be fine.
Okay. And last one, Rich in Bowmanville. Morning, everyone. Blue Jays predictions. Kirk out, Jose Ramirez at third, Story at second, and a solid number five starter or Pearson.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're getting Story and Ramirez, the number five probably has to be that Pearson-Stripling battle. I just don't know that there's budget for all three of those things, but I don't mind it.
It's fun to dream. I know
some people have skepticism about Trevor Story coming out of the Coors Field environment where he's had very pronounced home road splits. We talked about this with Ben Ennis a little bit last week. But also, and this was my point about John Gray, when I liked John Gray, is for every amount you might knock a guy down for having played at Coors Field, I might knock him up a little bit for having played for the worst run franchise in baseball that doesn't even have they don't have analysts. They don't have people working on player development from like a smarter approach. So maybe there's more to tap into with these ex-Rockies guys.
Yeah, it sounds great. I love how the Jays have entered like video game mode. It seems at least like these are all, these are bold predictions on the text line. But just talking about these possibilities and Jose Ramirez and who might come in and replace Marcus Semien in the middle infield with what they already have in Vladdy and Bichette and George Springer. Like it is, it's video game ALE stuff. And I love it. I love talking about it. And I think that there's that motivation on the side of Blue Jays management to make those big splashes. It's, again, we've discussed it being an exciting time for the Blue Jays with our predictions. It certainly is that way in the fan base, and it should be based on what they're doing.
Yeah, and I don't remember feeling that those things were possible all the time, and then you have a little run where you get Donaldson, Price, Tulowitzki, and these guys just keep coming in, and you're like, oh, you know what?
Yeah.
It is possible to do that stuff when you're good and when there's a lot of momentum behind you.
And when, Josh Johnson and Jose, like that was the Jose Reyes. That was like the first time, because we always saw that with Boston and New York. We saw it up close every year, just the limitless amounts of money and what that can do for a baseball team. And it seemed that it could never happen for the Blue Jays until they had that big splash. I forget the year, maybe it was 2013 around there. Then of course it worked in 2016 when they did it again. And it kind of feels like that again, although it's been much more methodical and probably sustainable this time around, which is a good thing, certainly.
Yeah, and homegrown this time. Ailish, anything else in the text line, or you want to pivot off here?
Yep. One more says, prediction, Ailish is going to score the game-winning goal for Team Canada's women's team. And I responded, I said, book it. Yeah, doesn't matter. Any Team Canada's women's team, Olympics, maybe U18s, I'll just go back in age. Maybe it'll be a beer league tournament. But I like that they weren't specific because that way it has a little bit more of a chance of happening.
I mean, if you really want, we can have just like a road hockey game
that would work.
590, and we'll just go, we'll make one team Canada and make sure you get
perfect.
The winner.
Where's the training at right now, Forzy? Could you step right in?
No, yesterday I shoveled snow for my parents and I can't even walk today. I was using their little massage gun last night. I'm like, oh my God, I've aged out of being an athlete at this point, getting sore from shoveling snow.
Before, though, the next day, the tough next day, if we just drop you down in that game without, shoveling snow the previous day, I think I'd still have my legs.
I think I'd have no hands. And my shot would be soft as hell, but I think that I could, skate some circles. Like I'd have the mind would still be there. Like the mental game, she's always on lock. But I don't know about the skill set. Might be a little bit too beer league.
Hey, it could always go off a shin pad, right?
Yeah, I'm all for that.
Also, Ailish, you say, oh, it'd be beer league. I think your beer league is probably a little different than. A lot of people's beer league in terms of, oh, what does Ailish at 70% look like versus, what does Blake at 70% look like? I think it's probably a different beer league level that we're regressing toward.
I'll be looking for some outdoor shinny when the new year hits. So let me know.
Mask up, though. I don't know.
Yeah, if we'll be allowed and also to do outdoor.
I don't know if we'll be allowed to do that stuff. I don't know where we're going with that stuff. Any fun jersey ones in the text line?
Hundreds.
I know you said you got a million of them. Yeah.
I have a Brandon Miller game worn Toronto Rock jersey. Is this Brandon Miller texting in?
Yeah. deep cut.
Very deep
cut. The Toronto Rock jersey. I'm very curious. Like, does someone wear a game worn jersey, or is that like strictly for on the wall?
Do they wash it, or does that lose the?
I don't think you can
wash it.
Yeah, you can't wash it. So you can't wear it that much either, because it would. It probably came stinky, and then, yeah, I don't know. All the Febreze in the world isn't going to help you with a dirty lacrosse jersey. I don't think.
Definitely don't knit it into a quilt.
Canucks vintage 96 beret jersey. Got it the year he wore it, the only year he wore it, still in mint shape. Corey from Orangeville. Wow, Corey from Orangeville, send that in. I'd love that jersey. Thank you.
You're just asking for it?
Yeah. That's like the dream jersey to have.
Yeah, I mean, I
assume it's the flying skate. So sick.
Yeah, I have that one in black. I have a beret jersey in black, but he said the one they only wore for the 1 year. I'm wondering if it's like the yellow, orange, and black, the lines on the shoulders kind of jersey.
Corey,
it's a V-neck one.
Really?
That's the problem. Is they brought it back, right? Like it's a beautiful jersey. What they wear now, they're alternate. But I guess you could just throw beret on that, and it would look great. But you know. I guess his a little bit, you know, authentic. Maybe it is that one with the V around the neck. That's got to be worth something. The old berets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's worth last one. It's worth inclusion on the Fan Morning Show.
That's good. There you go. You got a shout out. That's what it's worth.
It's priceless.
This is a funny one. Rich Ishmael, Argos jersey from the 90s. Until my brother cut the sleeves off to play basketball. Happy and healthy New Year from her in North York.
Yeah, that's so tough, a Rocket Ishmael jersey is a good throwback jersey. I honestly, the only disappointing thing about this is that his brother cut the sleeves off to play basketball and not to like play tackle football with his boys in it. Like the flex of I have this jersey, but I also need to let the guns out. it's not enough to have a cool jersey. I also have to show you my biceps. I'm never going to argue with someone playing basketball, but. To ruin a football jersey for basketball seems a little unfair.
I mean, if I saw Rocket Ishmael sleeves cut off at LA Fitness, I'm not jumping on the court against that guy. It's just not happening.
No. I can't believe no one's texted in that they have like an Ailish Forfar Markham Thunder jersey or something like that. There's got to be.
There's a couple floating out there.
Yeah. Can I get
Didn't
one?
Want to mention it, eh?
No.
No, oh, you're
they're out well, of production.
I figure you have stock though. It's like if anyone ever wants a copy of Chasing a Dream, the Carl English story as told to Blake Murphy, you know, I can facilitate that. But I guess less.
Unfortunately,
so
with... I don't. I told you once that I had to buy my Team Canada jersey after I wore it, right?
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I said that once on the air, and a lot of people were like, "Are you kidding?" I'm like, "No, like I wore the Team Canada jersey at." The tournament I was at, and then afterwards you had to buy it if you wanted to have it. I'm like, this has been a lifelong dream of mine to wear this jersey, yet I have to purchase it. And I wasn't gonna buy it. I was like, this is a joke. And then I'm like, I should buy it.
can we ask how much it was?
$250.
Whew. Yeah. Not even a little discount on that, eh? That's like that is full price for an authentic Team Canada jersey.
Oh, it was such a rip.
With the nameplate,
yeah. It's like, okay, here you go. Thanks for coming.
That's a lot. Keep those texts coming throughout the show. 590, 590, your best random jerseys or your weirdest jersey owns. Bold predictions for Toronto or Canadian sports teams in 2022. Keep that coming. We're going to look ahead to the very short-term 2022 after the break. We're going to talk to Gary Gramling of Sports Illustrated about just how high leverage this week 17 NFL slate is. We don't have a Thursday nighter tonight, but there are some very important games on Sunday. We'll talk to Gary about that next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. Good morning. Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy. Caleb Forfar, filling in for JD one more day. Justin Cuthbert, follow him at JC Cuthbert on Twitter. Follow her at Ailish Forfar. It's a heavy week in the NFL ahead. We do not have a Thursday nighter tonight to talk about, but oh boy, that Sunday slate. And who better to help us go through it than the senior editor at Sports Illustrated and the Monday Morning Quarterback and NFL writer, Gary Gramling. Gary, good morning.
Morning, guys.
How you doing?
Doing all right. Yeah, a little bit weird with no Thursday night football. This is always the strangest week of the year.
Yeah, it's not only weird for that. So we're up here in Canada where all the NHL games have been postponed because at least the Canadian ones because of capacity restrictions and COVID. We just had the World Junior Hockey Tournament canceled. The Raptors have had a pretty light schedule with a bunch of postponements. So, man, I needed this Thursday nighter, and it's not there. Football has abandoned us. But Sunday is shaping up to be one of the best days of the NFL season. So I guess I'll leave it open-ended for you off the start. What is your biggest must-watch game in this Week 17 slate?
Oh, I think it's going to be the Bengals-Chiefs game. I think the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. I think they've been the best team in the AFC all year. I think it was a matter of some of these sloppy turnovers kind of drying up, and that's what you've seen. But, look, that Bengals team, I mean, Joe Burrow is absolutely playing at an MVP level right now. Obviously, that's a team. They can lose this week and win next week at Cleveland and still make the playoffs. So it's not quite a must-win back against your wall type of game for Cincinnati, but it's kind of a really nice litmus test for folks like us to kind of see just how good they are. Between Burrow and between what they're doing defensively and really what they've done defensively for the past like year and a half now, that's a really good team.
Gary, I wish I had your confidence on KC earlier in the year, because it seems now they've pretty much solidified themselves as the team to beat and probably the team that's going to snag that number one seed and force you to go through their stadium in order to make it to the Super Bowl. But the value sucked out of it just a little bit now that they've, you know, cemented themselves as that team. But looking forward to their, you know, the run that they're going to be on here, What do you think the landmine is for KC? What is maybe the most dangerous potential matchup in the postseason, assuming that they do grab that number one seed and they're waiting for a postseason winner on the other side in the second week of the NFL playoffs?
Well, I think it's New England, and it's because, you know, you're probably going to get to what's the schedule this year. I mean, it's going to be early February if we're talking the AFC title game, or late January, or whatever it might be. But that Patriots team is really built to win in bad weather, we know what they do on the ground. They have that run game that looks like something out of, 1988 or something like that. They can kind of dominate games. And we know what they're doing defensively this year. So I think that's a team that no one really wants to see in January/February, even if you don't believe in Mac Jones. And I do think Mac Jones is a good quarterback. I think he's just a middle-of-the-pack starter right now. But he's, you know, probably not going to have to carry them in a way that a lot of quarterbacks do. So as much as I like Buffalo and what Josh Allen does there and his ability to carry the team, I think when you get in an outdoor game in, you know, sort of northern cold-weather cities come January and February, I think the Patriots are really built for that.
So you mentioned Josh Allen, and I know you said that Josh Allen made you giddy this past weekend. You still don't think that with the way that the Bills looked against the Patriots that they have enough to actually make something happen this season?
Josh Allen always makes me giddy for the past like three seasons now. Now, look, if they do it, it's going to be because Josh Allen plays like a superhero, which is absolutely within the realm of possibility. I don't like the fact that they don't really have that run game to kind of regulate the offense if they do get in the – I mean, look, even if they host games, I mean, we know what the weather gets like up there. We saw it it earlier this season. We saw last playoffs against the Ravens and all that. I'm not really trusting that defense either. I think they sort of – statistically got fat against some really bad offenses early in the year. And, they did play well last week in New England. I think they're kind of capable of stopping the run. But I think if you get them against a really good balanced offense a couple of times in January/February, I think they run into trouble, especially with no Tre'Davious White at this point. I think they haven't really been tested as far as that pass defense go, and maybe that happens if you face a Patrick Mahomes or face a Joe Burrow or something like that come playoff time.
Yeah, you mentioned the defensive metrics, and they're still hanging in there at number two in defensive DVOA. Pretty strong against the pass, but not great against the rush, as we've seen. And like you said, the quality of competition there. And I know DVOA tries to control for that. Sticking with the offensive side for the Bills, though, one of the big changes in the Josh Allen story on this past week was the emergence of Isaiah McKenzie. They lose Cole Beasley, and then Stephon Diggs gets kind of the extra attention, and McKenzie goes off. Is that real? McKenzie's kind of out of nowhere. Is this a guy that you can project forward as a part of the Bills offense?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he's better than Cole Beasley, but I think he's a lot closer to Cole Beasley than people thought. And I think you saw that on Sunday. Part of Sunday was, the Patriots kind of went out there and they put Miles Bryant on him and just sort of said, okay, we don't really have to worry about this guy. And I'm not saying people are going to double or triple team Isaiah McKenzie going forward if that's the situation. But we saw you can't really leave him singled up. And your third or fourth best defensive back and just trust that it's going to be taken care of. I do like McKenzie a lot. I will say, some throws Josh Allen was making on Sunday were just sort of mind-bending. I'm not sure you can really expect that to happen week in, week out, but it's just nice to know that, no Gabriel Davis, no Cole Beasley, and you do have another answer. You do have that depth on the roster at this point.
We're with Gary Grambling, senior editor of Sports Illustrated and the Monday Morning Quarterback. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers showed some vulnerabilities last year, losing to the Saints and sort of maybe showing just in off weeks that they were potentially vulnerable in those situations. I think it's different now. We've seen those same patterns maybe, but the injuries certainly have taken its toll. Now they're going to get some bodies back and they'll probably will be healthier than they are now as we move into the postseason. But with the challenges, with the injuries, can Tom Brady still get it done with the group he has?
I think with the group he has right now, yes. I think you look at Tom Brady going all the way back to his best days in New England. When his receiving core would sort of thin out because of injuries, if Edelman or Gronkowski was out, there would be sort of a domino effect where they had to dig deeper on the depth chart. They didn't have the same talent. I'm not going to say Tom Brady's a guy who needs elite talent around him to be good. He can still be good, but to sort of maximize Tom Brady, you do need those pieces around him. Now, look, Rob Gronkowski is he's turned back the clock this year. He looks like he did 5 years ago. And on top of that, maybe Antonio Brown doesn't belong out there. Antonio Brown probably does not belong out there at this point, but he is incredibly talented. And obviously he and Brady have a rapport here on the field and off the field. And that is going to be enough for that offense going forward, as long as there's not some catastrophic injury to one of those two guys. I think they're good offensively. And I think that's sort of that's really a legitimate four-way race there in the NFC once we get to the playoffs.
Speaking of potentially not belonging, I guess that's a little harsh for Trevor Lawrence, but it hasn't been pretty for the number one pick this season. He had the built-in excuse with Urban Meyer, but Urban Meyer's gone now, and you'd think that, Trevor Lawrence and maybe freed up from those shackles would maybe start turning his rookie season around. And maybe he did to a certain extent, but it was an ugly last sequence for the Jaguars and Lawrence in particular last Sunday. Just open the floor. What's gone wrong for him? Why hasn't it translated? And why has maybe the football instinct side failed Lawrence in his rookie season?
Boy, yeah, that was a weird final minute there. And I know the coaching staff sort of raised their hand and said, we want him to spike the ball and give away that down. I mean, look, we all get really fired up about clock management stuff because it's something that, you know, any of us can do well. If anyone's ever played Madden, I mean, you kind of know how to manage the clock as well as any NFL coach or quarterback. But, boy, it was really bad. And I don't know how that ends up playing out the way it did. But as far as the season goes, I mean, we know they're not very talented around them. You know, they do I mean, they have guys who just don't really – they don't get their head around to find the ball. They don't catch the ball when it hits them in the hands, et cetera, et cetera. But it has been something of an eye-opening season for him. I thought Trevor Lawrence really was idiot-proof. I thought he was an Andrew Luck-type prospect. I thought he was going to be fine no matter what they did to him in Jacksonville, and we're seeing what they did to him. But it's going to take a little more work, obviously, and – you know, getting an upgrade supporting cast takes a little bit of the way, and getting, you know, just a better coaching staff in there beyond Urban Meyer. I mean, what they're kind of asking him to do is it's strangely a mix of, you know, it's a very veteran offense. It's kind of what you'd ask, like, a guy who's been in your system for 5 years and sort of has this grasp on it to do. And on top of that, it's also – you know, like they're simplistic in ways that you just don't see in the league. They very rarely use motion, which is just it's something you do when you kind of don't coach your offense very well and you just don't trust guys will sort of, you know, get to the right spot to the right time before the snap. And that's something you work on in the summer. And apparently they just didn't work on it very well.
Yeah, it sounds like they didn't work on a lot of things very well under Urban Meyer. You called Trevor Lawrence idiot-proof in your column this week at Sports Illustrated, which it's such a great read at the end of every NFL week to kind of reset on everything that happened and anything you might have missed. You referred to the Jaguars front office as Melvins, which is always a great insult. Are you a wrestling guy at all, Gary?
Only very slightly. It's okay. Been years and years. I'm 100 years old, and it was like the Hulk Hogan days when I was into it.
But you are aware that the Khans, who own the Jaguars, own a wrestling company?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So CM Punk, one of their top wrestlers, took a big shot at them last night. They were in Jacksonville, and he said he was referring to another wrestler, and he called them the biggest waste of the Khans' money since Tim Tebow. Missed opportunity for an Urban Meyer shot there. I think maybe CM Punk's wise to the fact that, you know, the Urban Meyer thing's going to shake out where they could fire him for cause and not eat up that money. I'm assuming it's like a next level thing. But I do want to ask you about a potential Urban Meyer replacement. And this is, you know, I'm weirdly enough a Jaguars fan, so this obviously stands out to me, but it's also something with someone with a pretty strong reputation. Do you see Byron Leftwich as a potential fit to work with this franchise and alongside Trevor Lawrence, given where he's at in his kind of coaching career? Or is it still a little early for that? Or is there someone else that you look at and you're like, no, that's the guy for Jacksonville?
So Leftwich is interesting. And obviously the backstory plays into this. And you know, that narrative is fun. I mean, you know, as a Jaguars fan, it would be nice to get a familiar face and a likable guy in there at this point after what has transpired there. Look, I think Leftwich at best is kind of an unknown. If you're talking about the Bucks a year ago, I don't think you would identify them as a well-coached offensive team. And I think things got kind of handed over to Tom Brady, who sort of, you know, I don't want to sound rude here, though I usually do. Tom Brady's kind of like co-offense coordinator, co-head coach of that team. And obviously Tom Brady is not coming with you to Jacksonville. If I were selecting the Jaguars' next head coach, I just want a professional guy in there. I just want someone who knows how to run an NFL team at this point and then will build off of that. You know, so, yes, I do think like a Dan Quinn makes sense. I think if you're going to pluck someone off that Bucs staff, I think Todd Bowles is more interesting to me than Byron Leftwich is. Or, I really like Vance Joseph out in Arizona. I thought he got a raw deal in Denver. I want someone like that who's sort of, you know, proven they can sort of manage a collection of grown men and will make that the starting point.
We've been doing bold predictions for 2022 today. Tom Brady, new head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. There it is. You sold me on it, Gary.
There you go.
Gary, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man, and keep up all the great work and have a happy new year.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, guys.
Gary Gramling, senior editor at Sports Illustrated and the Monday Morning Quarterback. Josh Allen makes him giddy. Trevor Lawrence makes him sad. Not a great day for the me against Ailish dynamic here. Justin, any other games stand out to you as ones you're really watching or really honing in on this Sunday?
I'm with Gary. It's got to be KC and Cincinnati because I think it's the closest thing to, you know, a potential big playoff matchup. I'd have to, again, scan the board here. But that just stood out in terms of what, you know, two high-end teams in the AFC meeting each other with, you know, a lot on the line. Obviously, since he hasn't locked down anything yet, and KC still needs to win to get that number one seed. So that's probably the one that I have circled. I am interested in Dallas and Arizona, more so because I just want to see how Dallas follows up what was, you know, a tremendous performance, but also an easy game. I think those things can work both for and against you in the NFL, where there's such a quick turnaround and you're playing and resetting the next week. So will Dallas, you know, build on that momentum, or because they took their foot off the gas against an inferior team, what happens when they meet Arizona, who's got to be desperate at this point?
Ailish, your Bills have an easy one, relatively easy, against the Falcons. Your Patriots have a relatively easy one against the Jaguars. What are you watching on Sunday? What's at the top of your viewing list?
You got to stop saying my Patriots, because people are just going to tune in for these little pieces and then think that that's real. And they need to know that it's not real. Listeners, this is a facade that I've been pushed into. Not a Patriots fan. I can respect them, though. But you're right. Falcons and Bills game, I'll obviously be watching, but I don't have too much of a feeling that I don't know the outcome to that. Jaguars, Patriots, maybe I will watch because they're playing the Jaguars, and I would like them to smash the Jags. I don't know. Raiders, Colts could be interesting just because we talked about the dynamic between those two teams being something that I'm interested in and seeing who is the actual, I don't know, upper edge in there, but definitely it's Kansas City. I think that that's the biggest game. I talked about them earlier in the week. Well, actually, that was yesterday. That does feel like it's earlier in the week, but as them being the team that I feel like has the biggest chance at being a Super Bowl contender for me if I was betting futures, and I just want to see, I just got to keep watching them every single week because they're definitely the team to beat in my perspective as a Bills fan. So I'll be watching that as well.
Maybe we should have saved the Trevor Lawrence talk for next week. I mean, mm-hmm. Or at least you guys could have touched on it next week, because as bad as it's been for Lawrence and as bad as that last sequence was, this weekend he's got Bill Belichick and the Patriots. And we know what Belichick does to rookie quarterbacks. What he may do to Trevor Lawrence,
ooh, yeah,
could be detrimental beyond week 17 in the NHL or the NFL.
You say may do, it's going to happen.
No, yeah. I don't know. So
I'm scared for the young guy.
The next level Bill Belichick mind game with the rookie quarterbacks would be to not do anything special against Trevor Lawrence and just basically be like, we're not concerned. We don't look, if we're playing another team's third stringer, we don't really change the game plan. We don't change our base defense. You know, we adjusted for Josh Allen. We don't care. You're not going to beat us. That I think to me is a bigger ego blow and a bigger confidence shaker, is not we picked you apart. It's we didn't prepare for you at all because you don't matter to us.
If you don't occupy any space in our minds.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. A couple other ones. If Lamar Jackson was a limited participant in practice yesterday, if he plays, Ravens Rams gets really interesting. I think the Rams are still trying to establish themselves in that kind of contender tier instead of being the first team beneath it. And the Ravens still have a chance here. Justin, you said yesterday they're a team that if they can get healthy in time, you think gets interesting in a hurry, but they're running out of time here. So that's a huge game with high leverage there. I'm kind of curious in Dolphins Titans, just because the Dolphins are like have quietly stumbled into the playoff picture, but they haven't really played anyone good in a while. So we'll see how they play against the Titans. And then Cardinals Cowboys is interesting. Justin, I know you're as high on the Cowboys as I am. This one for me is more of a test of, do I have any faith left in the Cardinals whatsoever after the last couple weeks? Because they've been real shaky. Kyler Murray punting me out of my fantasy football playoffs. A couple shaky losses there to the Rams, the Lions, and the Colts.
Miami-Tennessee is interesting, I think, from a gambling perspective as well. I think I'm hoping, at least, that we don't get anything really definitive one way or the other, because I think those are both prime candidates to be faded down the line here. I think there's a little bit of fraudulence on both sides. And if they could stay within, you know, 3 points, a touchdown in some big matchups when teams are going to put their best effort out against them in week, probably not 17, because there's going to be some meaningless games there. But if we could get them at good numbers, I think Miami and Tennessee, I don't think either of them have postseason wins in them. So I'll be watching that one.
Yeah.
And can't believe we didn't.
Sorry, go ahead, Ailes.
I said, I just can't believe we haven't talked about JD's Seahawks versus the lowly Lions, who actually have 2 wins now. So I don't know if he's going in there feeling a little nervous that his team, he's lost all faith in the Seahawks. Like, maybe they just totally lay an egg and Detroit gets their 3rd win of the season. And stranger things have happened.
Look, just give the Jaguars that extra insulation for the number one pick. That's all I'm asking for.
There you go.
I need a Detroit win just to be safe and the Jaguars to lose out. Because the Jaguars are in the number one spot right now. And the Lions are the only team that could jump them for it. Other teams could tie them if the Jags win out, but need one more Lions win to feel safe.
If JD hates Pete Carroll, which I assume he does at this point, I mean, you know, there's Super Bowls to lean on, but I feel like most Seahawks fans want to see a change at the coaching position. A loss to the Detroit Lions in week 17, I think we're, 17. Mm-hmm. That might just do it. That might just push anyone to the point where they've decided it's probably the end of the road here for Pete Carroll.
On top of which, they don't have their own first round pick, so you can't even spin it as, hey, we get a better pick out of this. That loss would drop them into like pretty firmly into the top 10 in the draft. I think they'd sit 6th right now off the draft board today, so maybe even higher. And that pick is owed out. So tough one there. Tough time to be JD, but luckily he's not here for this. He'll just completely gloss past the Seahawks tomorrow, because tomorrow will be a more betting focused segment. By the way, Justin, that Dolphins Titans game, Titans are 3.5-point favorites at home. Ailish, you know what we do with short road
dogs.
Short
road dogs all day.
So maybe it's a Dolphins game. Still short road underdogs, still clearing over 60% on the season in the NFL this year. So keep an eye out for that one. We'll do a lot more with the Lions with Quebec Chris tomorrow, with JD back as well. We'll do a little bit more of this stuff in the 8:30 block, but right now we're going to take a break, and then we're going to sort through some of this World Junior stuff, what it means for the hockey world, how exactly this all fell apart. We're going to talk to Chris Peters, the NHL draft and prospect analyst at dailyfaceoff.com. We're going to talk to him after the break. He's the one who broke the official cancellation news yesterday. And obviously there's a lot of details we can pull through here. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.